Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking about the business of retail and how consumers have been adapting, or how consumers have been, you know, going out. What type of products are they, you know, are they buying? What are they shopping? Where are they shopping? And, you know, what are some of the trends? And for today, we are joined by one of the country's biggest retailers, that is Pick and Pay. But for today, it's specifically Pick and Pay clothing, because you know, they are pushing their e-commerce efforts with a new partnership with Zando. Many of you might know Zando out there. I think back in the day, Zando was associated with MTN in the country, but you know, on a more broad level, they are part of the Jumia Group, that is Africa's largest e-commerce platform. So you know, if you've ever shopped on Zando, now you should be able to also get yourself some Pick and Pay clothing as well on that platform. So we're going to be having a discussion with Hazel Pillay, who is the general manager for Pick and Pay clothing, just to understand, you know, why this partnership is something that they felt like they had to do, and also, you know, some of the insights that they've been seeing operating both in the physical retail space and in e-commerce. Hazel, greetings to you on this Monday.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me on the show today.
No, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Hazel. I was actually laughing with Hazel just before we began to say usually we like to get a sense of the organization, but Pick and Pay is one of those things that's such a household name. It would be so redundant of us to even ask what is Pick and Pay. So rather, instead of getting into that discussion, Pick and Pay clothing specifically, maybe you could give us, you know, a little bit of insight just around, you know, how big that, you know, particular operation is, you know, whatever metrics or details you can share with us, because I think in and around, you know, shopping centers, we've seen separate Pick and Pay clothing shops. At the same time, if someone goes into a Pick and Pay Hyper, there's usually a big, you know, clothing section as well. So maybe you could give us just some of that insight as we begin today.
Yes, Mudiwa, thank you. It's such a privilege to work for a brand that is so popular in the country and serves the community so well. In terms of accessibility of Pick and Pay clothing, I think our unique proposition really lies around the way we trade through different formats. So we do have standalone stores, and at the moment just under 250 standalone stores. But we also trade, as you rightfully picked up, in shared spaces. So in our hypermarkets, in our supermarkets, we trade with our partnerships with franchisees. And we've added to this format strategy a year ago through launching online in August last year. So it's almost just over 13 months. And now we're finding other ways to reach the South African customer as a start point through marketplace.
When it comes to that strategy of, you know, moving things online, you know, the physical versus the e-commerce bit, maybe you could talk to us just around the type of trends that you've seen, because you do have that privilege of operating on both sides of the aisle. Have your consumers been receptive to the e-commerce strategy? I can imagine that during hard lockdown, that was something that they might have been looking for, but ever since then, you know, as you know, things open up and people have more freedoms, what are you finding?
So absolutely. About two and a half years ago, probably even longer than that, it's just really speaking to my time of being in the brand, we were determined to launch an e-commerce site. And I think what's critically important to highlight is that it's not very easy to do this in a value or budget retail segment. Running e-commerce is not necessarily a profitable channel. And fortunately, we found ways through very good partnerships outside of Pick and Pay to be able to set up a site that we are able to proposition and fund within our business model. But if you really look at the landscape of budget retailers, you'll find that not all of them are online. So our first step into testing the waters of what to do with online, how do we launch it? Can we actually afford to have it? How does it work? What does it mean for our customer? I think we were very successful in launching that and learned quite a lot about our customer trends in the last 12 to 13 months. One of which is that customers do tend to shop online and also browse in store and vice versa. So they're looking online, then going into store, or they're looking and trying out product in stores and shopping online. And the both channels definitely feed off each other. We did not initially see any slowdown with launching our online site versus bricks and mortar. We certainly didn't see an over-proliferation or a switch in formats and channels of purchasing. We definitely see that they complement each other. When we initially launched e-commerce last year, it did have a fairly slow start, and that was purely because we were testing the waters and we really didn't spend large amounts of marketing or direct marketing with the customer. But having anniversary that launch 13 months later, we're seeing really astronomical growth year on year, and it is definitely performing along the lines of most online components in an omnichannel retailer. We still believe that different customers may choose different online channels to shop product. And we started having conversations with Zando about two and a half years ago around marketplace. And we did have a priority of launching our own online site first, and gauging and learning about what the customer would do. And 1 year later, we've launched Marketplace with online. We've only traded for exactly a week when we're recording this particular call. But so far, what we've seen is that it's only 1 week, but we have seen that both sites so far are able to exist. Our current online space is continuing to grow in astronomical numbers, and the initial sales that we started to see through Zando is actually very similar to our own online sales. So at the moment, it looks like incremental sales.
Now, one of the things that I'm, picking up, like you said, is the fact that there was, that slow initial phase that you guys found yourselves in, especially as you were testing out, what's actually going to happen in the market. And then from there, things start picking up and start, moving forward. And one of the things that one appreciates about businesses, especially listed businesses, is that they don't normally, businesses don't make certain moves, if it doesn't look like it's going to be profitable, either at the moment or someday in the future, or if it's not being gauged based on, current momentum. So when you do say the fact that you guys have seen a pickup, I guess the indication is that the pickup has been enough for you guys to actually go and, finally implement this plan over with Zando. And maybe you could talk to us about that. Why Zando? Because there are a number of different e-commerce platforms that are around, South Africa, and of course, I'm sure you guys wanted someone whose core business is in the e-commerce and sort of that retail space. But, from your point of view, why was Zando an attractive partner to actually launch with alongside your own offering that you have?
So the choice of Zando, we've done a lot of research about them. We've been in talks with them for around 2 to 2.5 years. I think you started off the conversation by saying Jumia is Africa's largest e-commerce platform. And I think when you make decisions about partnerships, it is really in hope of how a partnership would actually be able to benefit each other and grow. And I think the scope that Jumia has to offer us is much larger than outside of South Africa. We certainly see the Pick and Pay product offering as an offering that can live in almost any country. And we certainly would like to consider over time, not in the near future, what the potential opportunities would be around Africa. In addition to that, Zando is an e-commerce site. That's their single way of trading. So they are experts at it. And they have a large customer base. What we are still going to work out is if there is a crossover on base, and I think that would take time to be able to work out how that the customer might shift from platform to platform. It's too early to tell. And I also think from a brand proposition, they are very, very strong in their clothing, in their clothing offering. We research how they process their product to site, the ownership that they take on once they receive the product. And that was really helpful in the business modeling, because we're just able to hand over product that they take full control of. And that's really beneficial. It's also about testing a relationship where you can manage the levels of workload, that it doesn't really add too much infrastructure at the beginning when you're still trying to work out what the benefit would be. I also appreciated the different models that they have in how they contract with other brands. And we found a model that would be very beneficial to both brands as a start-off point. And they are very flexible in changing up these contractual modules, which is really important, because business can evolve and requires to be able to be flexible in terms of how growth manifests itself.
Now, Hazel, one of the things that is really striking with what you're saying is that ability to get to yourselves with a partner. Once again, I think what you've just said proves what I was saying earlier on, that as a business, and especially as a corporate, there's usually strategic decisions that are taken. It might not make full sense today, or the full vision might not be realized today, but usually looking, you know, time horizons, maybe 2, 3, 5 years down the line, looking at how all of this stuff can go. And one of the things that I'm curious to maybe understand is why the need to actually go with a partner, right? As opposed to sort of going it alone, because I do understand that it is in Pick and Pay as a group, in Pick and Pay's DNA to go and, let's say, do you've got the Pick and Pay has its own stores, at the same time they've got franchise stores, etc. So our partnership seems to be, you know, part of the Pick and Pay model. But in launching the e-commerce site, why also offer on a partner platform and as opposed to just owning the whole thing and saying we are going to just do our own e-commerce full stop?
So I think one of the key world trends, more amplified than ever before, is partnerships. So, you know, we're part of a food retailer, so you're seeing more and more partnerships linking up. You're looking at, you know, being able to get your pharmacy essentials through Mr. Delivery, you know. You're looking at being able to access different types of dominant food brands through different delivery services, and that's just one example of it. Partnerships in Pick and Pay particularly has been a very strong pillar. You highlighted franchise. The other partnerships Pick and Pay Clothing works with is young designers. And I think the decision to go online, we did make it before we entered into COVID, and it was strategically well positioned because of what did happen, what came about through COVID. So I think if retailers were considering, should I be online? Can I afford to be online? There was very little option when we entered COVID. You needed to be online. And that fast tracking and that fast exponential growth that e-commerce retailers experienced during COVID has been absolutely profound and outstanding. And it's shifted dynamically the way customers shop. It's not going to regress in any way. I think most countries, most e-commerce platforms, most retailers that are running e-commerce are continuously investing and forecast to see e-commerce becoming a larger part of their business. So the decision for us to join a partnership, join a marketplace, really isn't a difficult one. Number one, we do have our own site. It is run by ourselves. It's a pick and pay site. So if we're looking at building brand equity, we're already doing that. And we are growing, as I had said, year on year in really significant growths. And having a marketplace partner is another way of accessing the South African economy. Different customers choose different ways and different platforms to shop. We are positioned in such a way that if we need to make a decision 2 or 3 years down the line to run only one platform, we can still do that. But right now, I think that we cannot underestimate the change in customer patterns and wanting to shop online. And we need to be able to learn about them. And maybe this way of offering two options of accessing pick and pay through e-commerce will teach us a lot about our customer. And we can make future decisions based on that. So I think you have to have an open mind about how dynamically the environment is changing, how this dynamic environment change impacts the customer. And I also think that there are many, many retailers and clothing out there. And this is just another alternative way to be able to be present in the customer's mind. It's really all about the customers. A lot of these decisions that you make, you've got to ask yourself, does it and will it be able to benefit some portion of customers in the country? And I really do believe that. And so far, we have been able to confirm that. But at the same time, things could change and we would be able to be flexible enough to respond.
All right. Now, with everything that you're saying, Hazel, it really does sound as if there's a lot of different considerations, to make out there. And I certainly see the reasoning of going the partnership route. Like you said, there are a lot of partnerships that people are going about and signing at the moment. And it does speak to the fact that people and businesses are actually realizing that it's better to go in it together with certain new projects, especially if it's an area of potential investment, but you're not too sure what the reception is going to be. If you can take on the risk with a partner, then you can, get your learnings, make some money along the way, but also more than anything else, be able to study how the market would be able to take whatever product or offering you're talking about. And like you said, make those adjustments to the strategy over time and see how things go. With all of that in mind, I just wanted to maybe take a step back outside of just the online retail space and maybe just, take a position about clothing retail as a whole with e-commerce, with physical, all of that. Where do you see, I guess, things going? I think earlier on you did mention the fact that the two sort of feed off of each other. But do you sort of see, because there's a lot of alarmist rhetoric out there that says, brick and mortar is dead. It's no longer a thing anymore. People will just be buying everything online. So as Pick and Pay Clothing, I'm sure you're doing a lot of research. What type of trends are you actually seeing on the ground? Because at least you guys have the benefit of actually running a business and saying, okay, guys, we hear what you're saying, but this is what we're actually seeing.
So, yes, thank you. That was a really good question. If we had to think back on the onset of e-commerce trading, I think that would have been around the 90s and really progressing quite strongly in the early 2000s. A lot of retailers, many retailers would have thought that online would substitute bricks and mortar. And thankfully, and absolutely relieved as a retailer, that is absolutely not the case. The strategic shift, the trend that we are seeing is that retailers need to exist as omni-channel retailers. We are certainly seeing the trend that customers are using both mechanisms to answer the solution that they are looking for when they're shopping. So many customers, we're basically seeing this on the data search, that many customers are browsing online. They convert their sales in stores or vice versa. And literally the customer journey has shifted. And it is really important to note that, because it's not really an either or. I mean, I've been reading a lot about Amazon recently, and we're all aware of the fact that they started off as e-commerce retailers, but they opened up a few bricks and mortar stores and looking to do that in a faster trajectory. So you're seeing that even large shape-shifting, pioneering e-commerce retailers having a view of completing that customer journey with bricks and mortar. So it really is about omni-channel serving the customer journey in a completely different way. I'm at home in the evening. I'm scrolling on what's online. I may want to go to stores to try it on. Or I'm at the mall and I try on something and then I'm still deliberating it, and then I come home and I'm convinced to buy it, and then I shop it online. So I see that trend continuing. I certainly don't see from research, and this is research based, that one will substitute the other. What will happen in bricks and mortar is that retailers will have to certainly up their game from a customer experience perspective, really make sure that when customers are in stores, that there are clear proposition, there's clear communications, there's heightened service levels, so that there is a reason for customers to shop in stores. And when they are in stores, they are still very much delighted. They don't expect the same experience from online versus bricks and mortar. But they need to; those two customer experiences certainly need to leverage off each other and complement each other.
One of the things that does become, you know, quite evident when people look at the growth of online commerce and all of that is this question about who actually is shopping online versus who actually is coming into the stores. And, you know, to your point earlier on about the two feeding off of each other, I'm also curious to understand, do you find it's the same typical, is it the typical Pick and Pay clothing customer who would normally come into shops that is now also browsing online? Or do you find that online has probably introduced you guys to probably a different, you know, demographic, you know, that would have, you know, otherwise not come into the stores?
So it is actually a mixture of both those consumer subsets. Firstly, we do certainly have our regular customer who shopped in stores before shopping online, and we're seeing that through our data analysis, and we do have smart shopper data that we can look into. We find that customers that have shopped us before have a lot more confidence of buying a large amount of units online because they have shopped with us before. They're familiar with our proposition, our sizing, etc. And then we do also see an addition of a newer customer, particularly when we launch our designer ranges. So we just launched one now with Zara Kasim. it tends to attract a younger customer. So we are a family customer, really serving more the 25 to 35 age group, and we're finding that the under 25-year-old customer generally shops with us when we have something very unique and a lot younger in terms of style and fashionability. So certainly there are both our existing customer and access to a newer customer that's coming through the site.
That's actually quite interesting, you know, to have that both of those, you know, different crowds coming, because I think it does speak to the evolution of, you know, retail at the moment, that usually the physical retail space is sort of confined to who actually comes and walks by, sees the shop, maybe walks in, goes, touches some fabric and says, okay, fine, this is something that I might be able to buy, try something on, and you do that. But online, you know, you sort of open yourself up to, you know, different types of people that might otherwise either have not seen the physical store or would otherwise not have come in. So, you know, it's actually interesting from that point of view. But as we end off, Hazel, consumers themselves, you know, how are they? Like, are they okay? Are they buying more clothes at the moment? Is clothing one of the areas that people have, you know, been cutting back on? I understand the fact that you have said that the online side is growing, etc. But once again, it's one of those questions about the perceived reality of what COVID-19 has done versus what's actually, you know, on the ground. Are consumers buying more or less clothes? I think that's basically the question that we're asking.
So having a look at some of the statistical data, which really comes via the government in terms of performance in retail, there are certain months where clothing isn't actually necessarily growing on last year, but then there are other months when clothing is growing. So it's just really driven by what is happening in the external environment. So as an example, when back to school moved out in January to a lot later in February, that definitely impacted retail quite considerably and the shopping patterns per se. But what we have certainly seen from a customer trend in terms of their choices, and not sure how long this particular trend will last, but there's been a massive shift because of remote working into casual wear, into lounge wear, into more comfortable clothing, because people are working from home. And that particular trend could certainly evolve to customers wanting to buy smartwear over time, just depending on how remote working and hybrid working will impact their world. Certainly when an economy is strapped and customers have to be incredibly savvy, you'll find that budget and value retailing has got a more prominent positioning in customers' lives. It makes sense because they really need to balance out their wallets, and they find a lot more value in shopping down. In addition to that, customers will prioritize their children. That makes sense. But I think that if a retailer sticks true to their proposition, really creates true value in their product, and very unique propositions, very unique experiences, I really do think that they will be able to weather these turbulent times where the external environment is really driving different consumer trends. I do think that it is still possible to maintain or grow your market share, provided that a customer is able to read your proposition very, very clearly and very consistently.
And on that point of, I guess, growing market share, what's your outlook? You know, whether it's on the e-commerce side, whether it's on the, you know, physical retail side, just generally, you know, as a clothing retailer, what's your outlook either for the sector or just for Pick and Pay clothing? Maybe even what are you excited about, you know, going forward? Because this is one of those periods where, you know, for a lot of people in business, there's a few things to be excited about, but you know, there might be some green shoots or something out there that actually gives you some hope that you're like, okay, cool, I think this is something that I'm excited about, you know, and I think in future this is something that's actually going to pay dividend.
So from our side at Pick and Pay Clothing, I think we're very appreciative and grateful for customer support, number one. They've really still supported us during the really turbulent, disruptive COVID times. And what I am excited about is really being able to take our proposition and make it more accessible to more South Africans. I think you're absolutely right. Pick and Pay is a household brand. And being able to make sure that more and more customers can access Pick and Pay clothing, either through stores, either through online, either through a very affordable value proposition, so that whatever we do really adds value and solves problems in consumers' lives. I think we feel very excited and positive because we know that there's a lot more opportunity within this country and in the long term, certainly opportunity within Africa. I'm really excited about our summer ranges. I think we've worked incredibly hard to make sure that we keep our price points the same. We're really not wanting to charge customers more. The other parts of our business that has been really growing quite well and we're very proud of is that we have been growing local procurement. Our aim at Pick and Pay Clothing is to just find ways where we can create more jobs, either through opening up more omni-channel opportunities or really growing local. The other thing I'm excited about is our designer collabs, which are all local designers and manufactured locally. So our emphasis as a business is really, how do we make a difference in society? How do we serve the community? How do we serve our customers and be really consistent about that? And we're very positive. We're very positive about our future. And COVID has really, really put us in a position to confirm how much customers do appreciate what we do for them. And we really want to continue to do more and more of that and serve the customer to the best of our ability.
So making Pick and Pay clothing more accessible to more South Africans, that is the message coming from Hazel Pele, who is the general manager for Pick and Pay clothing, giving us some insight into how they are thinking around e-commerce, extending their offerings recently with a partnership with Zando, following the launch of their own e-commerce platform about a year ago. She says it was a slow growth in the beginning, but now they're really seeing good momentum and, you know, good growth. And they see this partnership with Zando, which is part of the Jumia Group, really as something that's strategic that will help them to actually grow further, especially if, you know, one day they do want to be able to take, you know, some of their offerings into the rest of the continent, for example. Those are some of the things that she's talking about. She's saying that, you know, on the side of partnerships, that's one of the big trends that they are seeing, you know, on the side of physical versus online retail, she says that there's still a place for both to exist, and things like online do open them up to a different type of demographic that would otherwise may not have found them perhaps in a physical retail stores. So breaking, you know, some of the restrictions that come with operating in the physical space, online retail certainly seems to be doing that for them. Hazel, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Fascinating discussion with Hazel, and I think one of the biggest pieces that she mentioned was the fact that there is a balance that needs to be struck between physical and online retail, that there's a place for both of them, and that's certainly something that one can understand the logic behind. But included in that is the piece that she mentioned about experience, and going forward, that's likely to be something that really drives entry on the retail side, to say, okay, fine, the goods and services that are being offered in store, you know, that's one thing. I can probably get the same thing online. Yes, there'll be the piece where in certain cases you still want to be able to try something on in a store, so there'll be that piece, but just creating that experience in the store, that's likely going to be a big driver for foot traffic going forward. The trends will only be seen, you know, over time, whether or not, you know, such a prediction is correct. But when one looks at what's going on with some of the retailers at the moment, you do see, I think brands like Adidas and Nike, Adidas in particular, they've actually been sprucing up some of their physical retail locations here in Johannesburg. I'm just thinking about the big one that they have in Sandton City, for example. That's really become a big experience, you know, taking on the technology side, but also, you know, some of the celebrity endorsements, the ability to, you know, check in real time how something will look on you using, you know, augmented reality, that type of thing. The way that they've created that store, right, that's taking the customer experience, you know, to another level. And those are some of the little pieces that retailers might likely need to be implementing as a way to just lure people to actually come into their stores and actually drive, you know, some of those sales. So it'll be great to see how the space evolves over time, but the experience factor is going to be important. I don't think it's fair to say that brick and mortar is, you know, necessarily dead. There'll always need to be some, you know, physical representation, especially of some of the larger brands like a Pick and Pay Clothing, for example, just a place that people can actually go to if they want to collect something, return something, but, you know, actually go in and try something on. So great to see, you know, what's going on this end. But whether or not they're just going to stick with Zando, that's actually going to be another piece to see how Pick and Pay does think about that, because Hazel did say that they've built in some flexibility to be able to run just their own platform or to run both of them in tandem. But at the same time, if need be, you know, they can, you know, switch one or the other off. What I'm interested to see then is whether, in addition to Zando, they might decide that they want to get onto other platforms that might open themselves up to other demographics. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.